I woke up one morning in early September of 24 and I said, I'm going to make bread. And I did. I'm going to make bread, but I'm not going to make bread the traditional way. I'm going to take a third of the flour out. I'm going to replace it with my guac. And I did. And I baked and it was not the most common and it was delicious. And it was great mouthfeel. And it was crusty and then chewy. It was just great, right? But to get that homemade thing, scale situation, took a year. And we finally did it.
We are diving into an episode that is going to inspire you with tales of growth and scaling from one of our guests. Today's guest is going to be special because we hand select people who are actively building and growing their businesses, people who know what it feels like to be in your position. As a listener of this podcast, trying to figure out what your next growth steps are, and they're going to share with us those insights, that journey, and what they're doing right now to position themselves in a better place for growth and scaling. So check it out if you haven't done so already, and subscribe to our channel. We are bringing some awesome business leaders into your circle, into your headphones, into your computer monitor today to show you what you can be doing to grow and scale your business. Share the love, subscribe to the channel, and at the end of this episode, see what you should be doing next to grow and scale your business. Hey, welcome back to the show. I'm so excited today to reconnect with a former guest and dive into the growth that's happened since then. Peter, tell us who you are and what are you up to?
Well, Todd, thanks for having me on 5 years later, right? Here we sit. About right around this time, 5 years ago, maybe a little before that, I was going on these Sunday fun days with my now wife, who was my girlfriend.
Nice.
And so.
Congrats.
Thank you. Yeah, she's been my wife now for 4+ years.
Love it.
She's awesome. Fantastic. She's a warrior. Light
Good wives are hard to come by.
No,
I've got one too. And they're awesome.
Yeah, that's right. Great minds think alike, right? So that's cool. We went to this little Cuban joint down the road. And they had this guacamole sampler. And I wasn't a big guac guy, but I liked it. You know, they did some stuff that was different. So I went home that night, got up the next morning. I said, I can do better. And I did. And I took yeah. And it's not me saying it. It's three of the top chefs in the country saying it.
Okay.
I've got a Michelin chef. I've got a James Beard Award winner. And I've got a Iron Chef all saying this.
Love it.
So I said, well, okay, great. Now what do I do with it? Well, then COVID hits.
Right.
And so 2 years after COVID, late 22, early 23.
Yeah.
To reach out to some of my friends that had a lot of experience in the CPG space, but also in the food space. And I said, right. I got something. Come on over. We're going to break out my guac. We're going to have some, you know, corn chips and we're going to have some tequila. Everybody loved it.
It's a good combo.
Yeah, it's a great combo. It's a great combo. I mean, you know, a little swamp simple tequila, and a little donkey chips and my guac, right? So
right.
At the end of the day, it's extremely hard to reproduce high quality gourmet guacamole at scale.
Well, sure. It just browns up on you.
No, that's not it. Mine does not. That's the thing.
Okay. I don't know how you're doing that then. Because listen, my wife makes a great guac and I'm a guac guy. So how are you able to do that without those faux pas right there?
Yeah, because I have no red in it. Number one.
Okay.
And number two, it's lime forward. Number three, the spice mix is nobody has my spice mix. Number four, I use the tops of scallions for the onion, the green.
Okay.
So we keep it green and we took it to a food scientist right here who used to work for Heinz. And he says, and he works for a grocery store chain here in Midwest.
Right.
And they make their own, you know, and he says, yours lasts twice as long as ours does.
Crazy.
Yeah, so, you know, we got that proven. And then we went to...
And no preservative crap, I'm assuming. Yeah, I mean, you're a healthy guy.
No. No preservative. Not. I have 5 products in 26. Okay. We finally find in Texas, actually, that can do it at scale. And he can bring about...
Okay, you're refreshing me a little bit because I hear Midwest, I hear Ohio, and I hear guac, and the dots aren't connecting for me. But now, okay, you're bringing Texas into the mix. I like the sound of that. Talk to me.
Well, at the end of the day, I'm Italian Armenian, so what the f- I'm all about making guac.
Fair.
But the point is I do. And so I have this talent. It'd be like you waking up one morning and you're a great world class harpist. Like, where did this come from? I'm not a chef. I never was. I like, you know, cooking, but it's, you know,
right.
So having said that, we went through all of 23 trying to figure out how to get this product, and then part of 24. And
yeah.
In early 24, I was introduced to Andras Lagsden. And Andras lives in Grand Rapids, but he is the creator of an entire industry called the baking steel industry.
Okay.
15-pound steel plate that goes in your oven, heats up to 500 degrees, and makes fantastic pizza crust and breads and blah, 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 all that.
Makes sense.
So he invited me up to do a thing called his show called Sauce Talk, and he made his what's called naked bake on his baking steel. And I made my guac, and we put it on top of this pizza crust, and it was off the chain great. So it got me thinking, right. What do I do with that?
So, got you thinking, got me hungry. All right.
There you go. And so it got me thinking it. So I went through the summer, because this was like in, I think, April or May of 24. I said, well, what can I do? And I've never made bread in my life. Never.
Right.
And so I woke up one morning in early September of 24, and I said, I'm going to make bread. And I did. But instead of
that's not a common thing to wake up and think, by the way.
That's what I'm saying. It has one of these, whatever, crazy Cimarroni moments. I've been living a crazy life the last 2 years. But at the end of the day, I said, okay, I'm going to make bread, but I'm not going to make bread the traditional way. I'm going to take a third of the flour out. I'm going to replace it with my guac. And I did. And I baked.
Okay. Again, not the most common recipe. Okay.
Not the most common. And it was delicious. And it was great mouthfeel. And it was crusty and then chewy. And it was just great. Right. So I took it to my good friend, Nick Orlando, who owns Orlando Baking Company. And it's a 150-year-old bakery that makes, it's a mass bakery.
Right.
They bake all over the Midwest. And he says, I can't stop eating this. I love it. Addicted to it. But to get that, that homemade thing to scale situation, it took a year. And we finally did it. And we sold our first loaf on Columbus Day this year.
Okay. That's awesome.
Yeah. So we have hamburger buns. We have guacamole hamburger buns and guacamole sandwich loaf. And we'll be coming out with pizza dough and bagels and pasta all in the next year or so. But
so I got to tell you, because I'm a huge fan of the guac burgers, right? But needless to say, by the time I finish eating a guac burger, my hands are green and stuff all over my shirt typically. This sounds like a safer way to do guac on a burger.
Big time. Big time. So you're absolutely right. So you're going to get that flavor. You're going to get that taste, great mouthfeel. You're going to get 3 grams of healthy fats, 3 grams of fiber, and 6 grams of protein.
Perfect.
Plus 45% of your vitamin C on a daily allowance.
I love it.
Yeah. So, and the product, it's got great mouthfeel, none of the crap, no seed oils, no garbage, So
love it.
But that's not our first product. So what our first product was in late 24, early 25, kept talking to my sister, and she kept saying to me, you should bring out Dingaloo. I said, wow. Well, that was our
family. Bring out what?
Dingaloo. Okay.
It was
our family marinade.
Gotcha.
Brought from the hills of Rome, but it was made traditionally with olive oil. And I said, I don't like olive oil to cook with because it doesn't have a high flash point.
Yeah.
And I don't like it really to use as a dressing because the flavor overpowers it.
Gotcha. So
I'm going to take that recipe. I'm going to replace olive oil with avocado oil.
Okay.
And I did. And it came out fantastic.
Interesting.
And we sold our first marinade called Carmine's, which is my father. Dingaloo, which is the name of our product.
Yeah.
St. Patrick's Day of this year.
Okay.
And since then, we are now in 70 stores and over 50 retailers with more to come. Like more to come. Big time. So, and then we also created two more flavors. One, the Betty Lou, which is named after my mother, which is our guacamole flavor marinade.
Nice.
Salad dressing.
Nice.
And then we have Zingaloo, which is the Dingaloo with some red hot chili peppers. So you got a little spice.
Okay. Little spice.
Little zing. Little right there. So, and then we're going to be coming out with two more flavors in first quarter as well. And so we should have a minimum of 7 to 9 products by second quarter of 26.
Okay, this is kind of a big deal. The fact that you are producing new products so fast,
yeah,
as you're trying to focus on distribution,
yeah,
how are you able to balance that? And what are your stores telling you? I mean, you're in 70 stores right now. Chances are, I feel like every time I've talked to you in the past few weeks even,
yeah,
you're adding new stores and getting new buy-in from different distribution channels. What's the balance like in trying to grow that? Because that's not an easy thing to juggle.
Yeah, it's not. It's really frenetic. And it's like my father used to say, it's like drinking from a fire hose.
Right.
But I love it. I love it. I mean, I did a 24-hour day about 3 weeks ago going to Chicago because we couldn't get a flight. So I just drove. We had to be at either 8 o'clock in the morning, and we had 24 presentations from
what?
Yes, 24 presentations from 8 to 5. We only had like a half hour break for lunch, and then I drove home.
Oh my gosh!
So I left my house at 2 a.m. and got into bed at 1:30 in the morning the next day.
You know, for a guy in your 30s, you got to be careful doing stuff like that.
30 times two, baby. times almost. Yeah, I mean,
Peter.
Year and a half away from 70. So,
all right. You shouldn't be doing this kind of thing at that age, but kudos for doing it. You must have probably had some of your chili pepper salsa going on top of something while you're driving.
You know, I had my president with me, and a few times he had to punch me in the shoulder on the way home. But it was
fair.
Yeah. Hey, listen, we got that in our back pocket. We did it.
I love it. Okay, so what right now, as you look at what you did, I mean, you started this as an idea during COVID. You're kind of like, I mean, yeah. Are you still selling the guacamole product, or is guacamole now just a part of the other recipe dressings and the breads and things like that? What's going on with,
no, the,
with
guac's the coming out in,
evolution in, of this product?
Yeah, the guac will be coming out in 26 because we finally found that producer in San Antonio.
Perfect. Okay, so the thing that got you started is the thing you're about to release next season.
Yes, so that's,
I love it.
That's how we got our flavor profile out.
I see.
In a different substrate, right? I mean, obviously, bread and hamburger buns and marinade are not guacamole, but they have the guacamole flavor profile.
Right. So.
Well, we're going to be doing that with pizza dough. We're going to be doing it with bagels. We're going to be doing it with pasta. So, and who knows what else down the road? Pita bread, you know, who knows?
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Tortillas?
Yeah. Tortillas, you know, pita chips, whatever. You know, we'll see.
All right. So as you grow this guac brand and this flavor profile, as you say, it makes a lot of sense to me because, you know, a lot of people do have a tendency to want to deviate from their core too quickly. And I think that is a growth challenge that a lot of people deal with is like, hey, we did this one thing. Now let's do 20 other things. And they forgot about that core thing that got them going. It sounds like what you've been able to do is tap into an anchor to that original profile that you built. And now you're kind of just shooting off the line from that anchor. Is that a correct assessment here?
Yeah, that guac, the reason the guac was so good is the spice mix.
Okay.
So, you know, a lot of guac is just very, actually kind of bland. It's just garlic and salt, you know, where mine has a lot of spices in it. And so back in the day, I said it was like sort of like my Colonel Sanders moment, you know, seven secret spices and all that. And I'm a little older than he was when he hit it. I think he hit it like when he was like 65.
Well, I saw some AI recreations of Colonel Sanders. I don't think he's really dead.
He's like Fat Al.
Fair. All right. So you've been creating this recipe. You've kind of introduced into this some family Italian flavor into this this authentic Mexican creation here, and the guac is moving forward and you're building products from that. I want to know at this stage of the game, you know, a lot of companies are thinking, okay, I either need to raise some money, I need to be acquired, how am I going to grow this moving forward? Talk to us about your strategy. Like, what are you thinking at this point? How does this brand now go from being in 70 stores to hitting a big chain and immediately adding 500?
Yeah, so we need a flag to be planted. We're working on a 300 store chain in Northern California.
There you go. Okay,
looks really good. We are going to be in our first Meijer store.
Cool.
Meijer has over 300 stores.
Okay.
On Saturday, we're doing our first tasting.
Nice.
And we have, yeah, and then we have three localish chains that would add up to 100 stores. So right there, you're 10Xing the stores.
Right.
In those three things.
Right.
And that's literally in front of us.
Right.
First quarter. We could be at 700 stores in first quarter.
Okay, that's a big transition.
Yes, it is.
What are you doing now to plan? And I ask this question a lot because I've kind of got this theme of like, are you growth ready? Mm-hmm. Like, assuming those POs come in, how are you going to fulfill? What is that strategy looking like right now? And what do you still need to put in place to make it happen?
So that's a great question. So we're managing the expectation on the retailer. So our distribution is we're giving our manufacturer a good 2-week cushion for
distribution. Right.
So there's that. And also too, none of these products have to be in the store.
Right.
The buyers want them in the store.
Right.
So it's not imperative that we hit, like if we say we're going to deliver on the 17th of November, if we deliver on the 19th, it's no big deal. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
We're not going to, but there's that expectation, right? So
it's really
the art of managing and presenting that expectation in the way it can be received, if you will. And so
love it.
That's number one. Number two, we're going to build inventory. Number three, we're doing social media. I mean, we did a post on LinkedIn, on my LinkedIn, and we did a DM campaign and we got 50,000 views. And on top of that,
I'm one of them. You actually DM'd me. I happen to be connected to you and I rarely look at my DMs, but I was like, dude, cool new product. Let's talk.
Exactly. Right. And
all
it was we're live on Amazon and we sold out in October. So to the
Now walk us through that, because I think a lot of people, when they think food processing, food manufacturing and food distribution channels, they tend to not think about Amazon at any point. They really are just thinking, okay, I got to get in some retail stores. At some point, I got to hit a Costco. At some point, I got to hit these other giant trigger bombs. But tell us about your Amazon experience, because when you mentioned to me when we reconnected about your Amazon selling out, how does that factor in to your ability to maybe test with some new flavors, test with some new things without committing to the stores?
So we're not doing that yet.
Uh-huh.
We want Amazon to be like another big chain for us.
Cool.
Okay. So, and the cost effectiveness is truly elegant. And we have a guy, here we go on LinkedIn. This is like a commercial for LinkedIn, but one of the guys that I'm connected with loved my product, took a picture of it, buying it at one of our retailers, sent it to me on LinkedIn DM, then posted it. He says, can I post this? I go, absolutely, please do. And introduced me to a guy who has an entire Amazon store.
Nice.
So I have an entire plug and play with Amazon.
Fantastic.
The guy's basically, he's another vendor for us. And so what he's doing is...
He's a distribution channel.
He is. Beautiful. And now he's just committed to putting the breads and buns on. So we have the three marinades.
Nice.
We're selling them singularly. Then we're selling them in a three-pack. We're going to be selling them in a two-pack. And then we're going to be selling the breads and the buns all before Thanksgiving.
Wow. Fantastic.
Yeah. So that's
fantastic.
At this point, that's my Amazon play. So
I love it.
Yeah.
Now, for those of you listening, this episode will likely come out around that time or shortly thereafter. So I'm going to challenge everyone listening to go check it out and see what happened on this Amazon play, because I think this is part of the fun of experimenting with channels like this. I mean, multi-channel distribution is obviously the key in any food manufacturing. And to be honest, I have a couple of boutique vendors who I buy from, shameless plug, Chalk Zero guy. I love low carb, yummy chocolate, and they've got a lot of it. I've found that their Amazon does almost as well as their branded store on their website. And so I applaud you for finding that out before a lot of people, that selling food products on Amazon is a good channel. And how do you maintain that demand on there? Because I'm assuming once people buy it once, they're going to want to return back and buy it a second time. How are you able to keep up with that demand on there versus what the demand is in the stores and those distribution up channels?
So, we just cracked the whip with our manufacturer. and if they don't want to produce, well, we've got two other co-packers ready to go.
Awesome.
While I never was a Boy Scout,
Boy Scouts are, you know, be prepared, right? And so you have to be prepared for contingencies.
Right.
So like literally every tasting I bring, every tasting I go to, I have labels with me.
Right. Right.
I have extra bottles. I have, you know, everything is like, a to-go kit, whatever. Because you just want to be prepared for anything that happens. Okay.
Love it.
And it's the same thing with this production. You've got to be prepared for anything that happens. And even then, it's shit's going to happen.
Of course. You know? Of course. And listen, you know, by no means, for those of you listening who are maybe five steps behind Peter in his growth journey right now, bad stuff does happen all the time, probably on the daily.
All the time.
Given the resiliency and your experience as a business owner and just kind of at this stage of the game in your life where you're all of a sudden discovering this passion for this specific food product and this play in your life, what kind of things are you doing differently now than you may have done in your 30s?
So we had cough pops, cough drop on a stick.
I remember that. Yeah.
And so
very cool.
I didn't do it in my 30s. I did it in my my early 40s.
Right. Give us a brief recap of that experience, because I think it's very relevant to what you're doing now. And you probably learned a few things doing that.
Oh, I learned a lot. I got a lot of scars from that experience. Matter of fact, I was sitting with a guy by the name of Rick Smith, who took Coldies at the same time from zero to 50 million. I was good friends with a guy by the name of Guy Quigley. Guy Quigley was the inventor and CEO of Coldies. And I met with Guy in his, he had bought a church in Doylestown, PA, and he had his office and his manufacturing and everything in this church. And I met with him in his church, in the basement of his church back in 19.
Right on.
But we created that product. My brother-in-law was holding a lozenge in my niece's mouth.
Yeah.
In the winter of, it was Christmas, right after Christmas of 96. And I went over to my sister's house, my brother-in-law. I said, what are you doing? He goes, well, I don't want her to aspirate. And he was a doctor and she was a nurse. So, you know, they know what they were doing, but I didn't want to give her medicine. I just want to give her, she had a little scratchy throat. So I said, well, it's gotta be a better way. Why don't we put it on a stick? And that was it. And so I went.
So cough drops on a stick.
Cough drop on a stick.
Love it.
And so we created the category. We found great brokers. I found an angel investor because I was raising kids and, you know, making my bones that way back then. And that angel turned into a bit of a devil, and he brought in bad distribution guy. And we had to fight, you know, we ended up finally selling in 2006. I would say that we hit a triple. We should have hit we should have hit a grand slam, bottom of the ninth in the World Series. Okay. Which Guy Quigley did at Coldies, cause he's now living on an island in the Caribbean.
Ah, I hate those guys.
You know what I mean? But deserves it, you know? And so I learned now what not to do.
Right.
And really one of the biggest lessons you can learn is what, and I have.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So learning that lesson, what have you done to protect the brand, protect the way you're doing this differently than you did with those pops?
So I will never bring in bad people. If I do, if they don't do what they say.
Right.
If they're not proactive, they're gone.
Fair.
They're gone. And I had to have this conversation with a provider a few months ago. And I said, as long as you have my back, I'll have yours.
That's right.
You know, and he didn't produce and I fired him.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, you said you'd have me. I said, yeah, but you didn't have mine. So you can't hold me to a standard that you're not willing to live up to while I am living up to it.
You know, that reminds me, Peter, of a statement that my one of my early partners in life, business partners in my 20s, every month or so, we'd run through our entire employee list and we'd say, all right, it's not who you don't hire that kills your business, it's who you don't fire. Yeah. And we'd run through the whole list. Are they living up to what they promise they do? Because I know we're making payroll every 2 weeks. We're doing what we said. We're providing the vehicle, all the stuff for them. What are you doing for me? Because I'm giving you everything I promise. So how do you encourage someone listening to this show who's trying to battle their own growth journeys and their own employee circumstances, and maybe somebody helped them at one stage and now they're just kind of a drain, a bleeding sore in their company? How do you encourage them to like make those decisions quickly and tactfully?
Well, you got to give good and bad news fast. Okay. Yeah. So that's number one. Number two, I don't care what age you are. Life is precious. Time is precious. You must be time jealous. And you have to look at that not as a 38-year-old or a 28-year-old, but look at it as an 88-year-old.
Right.
Think about, you know, so if I'm talking to a 28-year-old, think about if you were 88, would you treat today the same way you would do it now? Then why are you doing that now? So, you know, live every, absolutely explode into every moment. That's all we have is this moment right now. This is it. Everything in the past is the past. Everything in the future has not been created. We are explorers in every second we live because it's coming. It's coming. It's coming. So at the end of the day, I don't want to get too esoteric, but at the end of the day, you cannot waste time. It is your precious commodity. You can't waste it.
Well, and Peter, coming from someone with your experience in life, this does mean a lot. And I think that for those listening, you know, take it for what it's worth. Here's a guy who came up with a fun idea at this stage of his life, and he's pushing this like he's in his 20s. Yeah. And I think that that level of excitement, if you're not feeling that energy towards your business today, reconsider what you're doing. Because if it's not building that excitement, you need to be. And if you're not feeling that, it's going to reflect on how you present to your potential buyers, your potential clients, even your vendor relationships. Peter, to wrap this up, I want to tap into your wisdom. And I really want to tap into how you've been able to make that happen at this stage and how you intend to kind of pass that to the people who will likely be running the day-to-day as you get all the foundations of this set up the right way.
So be undeniable. Have no plan B. I know people have no plan B.
I love that.
And so people say, well, what happens if this doesn't work? I go, there's only one way this doesn't work is if I'm in the ground. That's the only way this company won't work.
Fair. Okay. I like that.
Yep. So. You just got to go for it. Bro.
For those listening, I mean, that's a very, very powerful lesson. And I do believe in what you're saying. And I got to say that, you know, in the last couple of conversations that we've had, you're completely laser focused on what you're doing. You're laser focused on the product, on the way you're bringing it to life. I love that you didn't rush into a manufacturing solution with your guacamole that wasn't going to be right until you found the right way to do it. I think you're demonstrating a lot of maturity in your decision-making and bringing all of these products to life in the fact that you're not rushing, you're getting things out as quick as they can when they're ready, and you're introducing things in a way that's manageable instead of overextending and likely going to draw yourself out of a beneficial situation.
Yeah. And frankly, this thing with the producer we talked to you about, these co-packer, you got to take the hit. Get better. You just got to. And you can't keep giving people chances that don't learn and don't grow and don't get better. You just can't.
Love it.
You just don't have the time.
And that goes with, it sounds like, not only employees, but vendors, partners, distribution channels, all of the above. You've got to be thinking that way. And if you do, things do align. And the right partners come into play that you maybe didn't even see coming.
Yeah. And I'll make one more comment too. You asked about employees. You know, with what we have right now, we have owners. So if you're not thinking proactively, you're not an owner. If I'm going to tell you what to do, if I got to direct you what to do as an owner, you're dead weight.
Love it.
You know, so, and
love it.
Employees, you should have them feel like this term entrepreneur, that they actually own the company as well.
Yeah.
They're part of, so that they have a stake in the creativity of it, in the growth, in the actual, I hate to use the word culture, but culture they create, you know.
No, I get it.
Lack of a better term, you know. And so that's really where the rubber meets the road for me, the old Goodyear commercial.
You know? Right. I love it. Peter, this has been a really fun conversation and it moves fast, but I feel like we touched upon a lot of the growth and scaling factors that come into play with your business. And for those of you listening, if you're in the food industry and you're hearing something that we're not saying right or saying amen to this thing, leave the comments below. We're dying to see, because, you know, this is not either of our life experiences building food products. And Peter, you being able to produce what you're doing and make this thing happen and get the distribution you already have in such a short time, I think it's phenomenal.
Thank you.
And I wish you the best of success in your growth. And I know you're aligning with the right partners to make that happen right now. And thank you so much for taking the time to reconnect and fill us in on what's happening in your life.
Todd, thank you for the platform. Thank you for your graciousness and your community. Much appreciated.
Awesome. Hey, we hope you enjoyed that episode. As with all of our guests that we've enjoyed on this podcast, we hope you take a minute to reflect on how relevant was that to your growth journey. How relevant is that to your business? If you are not taking steps to grow and scale your business, chances are you're not growing or scaling. So how do you know if you're growth ready? Check it out at growthreadiness.com. If you haven't done so already, we have a free assessment at growthreadiness.com. That's right, growthreadiness.com. And measure up to see if you truly are growth ready. If that magical amount of funding or that magical client popped into your doorstep today, would you be ready? Could you grow and scale your business with what you've got ready right now? Chances are there are some places you're strong, there's some places you're weak. We let you explore that for free at growthreadiness.com. Click on the assessment at the top right, and we challenge everyone that listens to the podcast to go see how growth ready your business is from your perspective as an owner, founder, operations director, or even a sales manager. Is your company on a path to growth readiness? If it's not, reach out, let us know what we can do to help. We have tons of resources, tons of free stuff, and some really, really high quality paid stuff that's going to help your company reach that level of growth that you hoped it could be on. Whether you're aiming for exit, whether you're aiming for a fundraise, or whether you're just trying to sustain the growth you've already had, go to growthreadiness.com and check out what you're doing and if it's working for you. Thanks for being a part of the Growth and Scaling podcast. We hope all these interviews are helping you determine the best path for your growth and giving you real-world examples of what you could be doing in your business today.